Then he says, "Ah, well, it was a joke, literally. I'd always been really shy, oversensitive, overweight too, of course. I'd never tried to date, and then all of a sudden in my first year of college, there's this really gorgeous girl after me. I couldn't believe it, but she was pretty convincing, and we ended up in her dorm room one Sunday afternoon, and I say nothing, wait. We ended up in bed, and I was so," he laughs, "well, I got pretty emotional. I thought it meant, well, I thought it was real, and I thought it meant everything, but it was a joke. The girl, Christy was her name, had made a bet with someone. She got $100 for sleeping with me." "Oh, King, I'm so sorry." "Somebody came in just after we finished and took a picture. They'd been standing outside the door the whole time. I guess they passed it all around." He puts down his glass, leans back. "I never told anyone this before. I never thought I would. But it feels kind of good to tell you, Sam. Anyway, after that, I just gave up on ever. I let myself get completely taken up by what I was studying. Whatever that longing is, whatever it is that makes people want to be together, I made that need get met by what I learned. Everything is there in science, even human emotions, I mean. It's as though they're represented by certain universal laws. Remember when they found the naked stars? Did you read about that?" I laugh. "No. You know what a naked star is?" I think for a minute, and then I can't help it. I say, "One that just got out of a meteor shower?" Very funny. "But what they are stars, with most of their gaseous atmospheres stripped away. And you know why they're revealed like that? Because of close encounters with other stars. I find something very human about that, don't you?" I nod, smile. "I see that kind of thing all the time. It's thrilling to me. And at the same time, there's a kind of peace there, in that kind of contemplation, that you don't get in relationships. At least, I don't think you do." "Why did you stop?" I ask. "Stop what?" "Working at it." "Oh, I haven't, not at all." "But you know, your job isn't exactly astrophysics." He sits back, looks at me. "Do you ever think about how hard it is to say something and have it be precise? Especially the things you care most about. You hear the words coming out of you, and they are just not quite what you intended. You mean red, you're thinking red, and then out of your mouth comes chartreuse. And you want to take it back. But then the other person is saying, 'Oh, chartreuse, I see,' and it's too late, it's gone. I don't know that in human relationships you ever find the true crossing from here to there. But in physics, it feels like you're getting there. But," he holds up a finger, "I don't work in it, because when I'm away from it in the specific, I'm better able to see it generally. Do you understand?" I think I do understand. But it's too hard to say how. It's an internal acknowledgement, a yearning kind of stepping forward that will not translate itself into any words that I know. He's right about the limitations of words. And so I say simply, "I do understand." He looks at my plate. "Are you finished?" "Yes, thank you. It was delicious." And it was. Rosemary chicken, garlic mashed potatoes, corn on the cob, sweet peas, a chocolate cake he'd made, from scratch, of course. "Buttermilk's the secret here," he told me, "and you put a little coffee in the batter." He takes our plates, puts them in the sink, runs water on them. I sit in my chair and watch him, his slow and careful movements, his obvious contentment. There is a low buzz to the overhead light, and the sound is comforting. I want to stand close behind him, lay my head in the shallow valley between his shoulder blades. Instead, I drink more wine. "Would you like to go into the living room?" he asks, when he's finished rinsing the dishes, a shy formality. "Yes." He gets his wine, and I follow him into the living room. "Sit anywhere," he says. I choose the chair, and he sits at the end of the sofa nearest it. "You know the thing about the jobs I do? A lot of people think I'm lazy." I say nothing. This has occurred to me. "But I want time. That's why I walk dogs. I don't want to keep on moving up the ladder, trading in one car for another. I want to be appreciative of all that's here in a normal life. I want to keep finding out about the things I see around me." He leans forward, looks at me intently. How do birds know how to fly south?
I don't know.
Yeah, most people don't. Why don't you know?
Well, I guess I just take some things for granted.
But Sam, listen to this. They have internal compasses, sensitive to the Earth's magnetic field. They calibrate them by sunlight and by the stars. Think of that. Next time you see a bird fly by, think of that. They're everywhere, Sam, these wonders. Do you remember the last time you really wanted to know everything? The answer comes to me like a movie in my head. I am flat-chested and pigtailed, bending over the edge of a lake and watching the lace-like line of froth advance and recede, trying to determine what makes the water green. The sun is warm on my back. I am entirely unselfconscious. My body is a sack of flesh and bones whose function is to take me where I want to go. On my dresser at home, I have rocks and various kinds of leaves, a jar with a cocoon inside that I inspect 1,000 times a day. I am obsessed with discovering things as though I've been let out of the hatch of a spaceship and told to come back with a full report. For some time, I have nourished a fantasy that a small group of very wise people dressed in close-fitting silver will show up in the middle of my geography class saying, "We've come for Samantha," and I believe I will rise and follow them, leaving behind forever the lunchbox I'm embarrassed about because Veronica always buys the wrong one. I do remember when I felt like that, I say. I was young, a little girl, but strong. I was so busy. And then I woke up one morning, feeling clumsy and worried to death about which shade of lipstick to wear. And then I woke up the next morning and I was married, and then in labor, and then I had the job of caring for a family, which satisfied me, which is a sin now, but which satisfied me, because it seemed to be about everything. You were happily walking dogs, so to speak.
Yes, yes.
I think for a moment and then say, "So you aren't expecting anything, are you?"
"I'm just watching the show," he says.
"I think it's so good. I don't know why people walk out on it in all the ways they do." I kick my shoes off, pull my feet up under me. Einstein didn't wear socks.
I know.
That's all I know about physics. That's almost enough. Oh, God, King, you always make me feel so, like I'm fine.
That's because you are, Sam. How come you don't know that?
I'm embarrassed by a sudden rush of tears. I wipe them quickly away, then laugh at myself.
Oh, geez, look at this.
"Maybe we should go out," he says gently. "Want to see a movie?" I nod. I felt it too, a sense that if we took one step further in this direction, we would fall off a cliff together. And I don't know, I still feel made of glass. Chapter 28. "Construction," I say. "You're kidding."
"No, I'm not. Stacy, the woman at the employment agency, tells me they're desperate and I can't find anyone else. It's easy work," the guy says. "He says anyone can do it and it pays well."
"But I don't know anything about construction."
"You don't have to. He'll show you what you need to do. You just put on some old clothes, bring some gloves, and he'll take care of the rest. You want the job?"
"Well, yes."
Stacy tells me the address of the job site, and I go upstairs to change. Bib overalls, a flannel shirt, a ponytail, my hiking boots. All of a sudden, I feel cool. Mark Quinton is killer handsome, the kind of guy who should be posing for calendar pictures for women's fantasies. He's up on a ladder wearing work boots, jeans, a tulle belt, and a white t-shirt with Quinton Construction Company written beneath a picture of a circular saw. He looks down at me when I come into the room, smiles. "Can I help you?"
"I'm here from the agency. Sam Morrow?"
"You're Sam?"
"Yes."
"I thought you were a man."
"No, it's Samantha. Did you need a man?"
"No, it doesn't make any difference. Glad to have you."
He climbs down from the ladder, comes over to shake my hand. "My partner is sick today, and I'm way behind on this job."
"I have to tell you, I don't know anything about construction."
"Ever use a hammer?"
"Well, sure.
Then you know something about construction."
I look around the room. Thick sheets of plastic for a roof and walls. Saw horses. A circular saw resting on one of them. Stacks of lumber, boxes of ceramic tile. Huge quantities of long nails. Large pieces of plywood,
piles of sawdust, a space heater that's doing a great job keeping the place warm. So, what do you want me to do?
First thing is a coffee break, Mark says. You like cranberry muffins?
Yes, I do.
He opens a bag, spreads out a napkin on boards over a sawhorse, sets out two muffins. Then he opens a thermos and pours two cups of coffee into paper cups. It's got milk in it, he says. That's what me and my partner like.
That's fine.
No sugar.
Perfect.
What we're doing is a kitchen family room, he says, and what I'm working on today is the roof and the window frames. I need you to take a shitload of nails out of some plywood that I'm going to reuse on the roof. That'll be the first thing, okay?
Fine.
Then I'll need you to take my truck and run an errand. Go down to the lumberyard and pick up some supplies. You just tell them my name and they'll load you up.
Okay.
I finish my muffin in two huge bites, gulp down the coffee. I'm ready.
You're going to work out fine, Mark says, grinning.
He turns on a radio splattered with paint. You like country and western?
Uh-huh.
You gotta hear country and western when you're working construction. I watch as he shows me how to take the nails out, hammer on the pointed ends until they're almost all the way out, then turn the board over and pry them out by the heads, put them in the plastic bucket, save them. I work on this for 2 hours, then say I'm finished. He comes down, looks at the boards that I've stacked neatly in the corner.
Good, he looks at me, nods.
Come over here, I'll teach you to build a header. That's what goes along the top of the window to support the weight of the roof.
He lays out two boards of uneven length, tells me to align them at one end, then nail them together.
Here and here, he says, indicating where the nails should go. Avoid the knot holes. I look around nervously.
Are the owners here?
Shit, no, ain't nobody home anymore. People hire me to do these beautiful things to their houses, and then they're never in them.
He hands me a nail.
This is a 10-penny bright, he says.
Drive it, girl.
I place the nail, tap tentatively at it. Use your shoulder, Mark says. Get your weight into your swing, and stand off to the side a little. I do as he tells me, and the nail makes its way a good third of the way in. I look up, a little thrilled.
That's right, he says.
I pound again. It feels so good.
Sink it, Mark says, and I do.
I'm not going to tell you what I was thinking while I did that, I say, straightening my hands on my hips.
You don't have to, he says, and hands me another nail.
It was nothing about David, what I was thinking. It was about me. I was thinking, I am worth something.
Mark climbs the ladder, and I finish nailing the boards together. When I'm through, he looks down and says, see that? You just built a header.
I take a breath, nod, nod again.
Now go and get the keys to my truck. They're in my jacket, Mark says.
Then go to National Lumber. You know where it is?
I do know. I've driven past it many times, and I tell Mark this.
All right, go on over there and tell them you need what I called about this morning, and then we'll have lunch.
Burger King, I say. Is that what you like?
I thought that's what you guys ate all the time.
I like those tofu roll-ups, Mark says, but I could do a Whopper.
We sit at a small table by the window at Burger King. Mark is telling me about the time he got kicked out of his Catholic school for falling in love with a nun.
Are you serious? I ask.
He nods. She was real young, and I saw one day that there were all these little hairs escaping from her wimple. I thought, whoa, that's a woman under there. Before that, I didn't really think they were women. I thought they were a kind of separate species.
So you saw her hair and fell in love?
Well, not right away. What happened was, I was a pretty good artist, and she used to take me outside up on a hill and let me draw. And she would just sit with me, read. Sometimes she'd read out loud. It was nice. And then one day we started holding hands, hugging a little.
He shrugs.
Kissing. Anyway, somebody saw us, and I got expelled, and she got fired. Never saw her again.
How old were you? I ask.
12.
12?
He takes a sip of his Coke.
Yep, I got a son coming up on 12 now.
I look at him sometimes, you know. He doesn't tell me anything anymore.
I know, I say. They stop.
Right around 10, they start getting pretty quiet.
It's true.
Makes you kind of miss the days when they ran around with their pacifiers, their little tummies hanging over their diapers. Remember that? Those little belly buttons?
I smile at him. What a good man.
Mark crumples up his bag. Ready to go back to work?
Yeah. In the truck on the way back, I look at my hands, two blisters starting. I couldn't be more proud.
Chapter 29. I can't do this stupid homework, Travis says. I hate Mr. Houseman, he's stupid. Let me see, I say, and stop peeling potatoes. At the kitchen table, Travis is holding his forehead in his hands, his usual way of conveying anguish. He looks up at me, frowns. You're no good in math. Well, just let me see, and for your information, I got an A in algebra. This is not that, he says. And it isn't. I don't quite understand what it is. Something close to geometry, though, and I still remember taking my geometry midterm when I was a sophomore in high school. I passed the time by drawing designs for evening gowns on the back of the exam. Everything on the front of the page only annoyed me. I'm afraid you're failing this class, my teacher had told me later, sadly. He was speaking in a very quiet voice, a whisper, really. I know, I had whispered back. Why don't you come in after school a few times a week? I'll give you a little extra help. Okay, I said, thinking, oh, please, no. But I had gone, and Mr. Seidel had patiently drawn angles and worked through proofs, explaining at each step what he was doing and why. For my part, I had watched his hand as he wrote, admiring his neat penmanship, looking carefully at his wedding ring, wondering what his wife was like. When he finally looked up and asked me if I understood, I responded with a blank gaze. He'd given me a D- as an act of remarkable kindness. Can one of your friends help you? I asked Travis. No. Well, call Dad, then. He'll know how to do it. He's on a stupid business trip. Oh, right. Well, then, I'm sorry, Travis. I don't know what to tell you. I guess you'll just have to talk to your teacher tomorrow. I go back to the potatoes, out of enemy territory. I'm so glad I'm finished with school. If I were told to go home and spend my evening doing homework, in 5 subjects, no less, I'd start screaming. Can I call King? Travis asks. Of course. Why hadn't this occurred to me? Sure, it's 247-8893. You know it by heart? Yes, I say. And then, I mean, it's an easy number. Travis goes into the family room to make the call. He hates his math class, and I don't blame him a bit. But he's going to have to get through it, or he'll end up like me. King knew how to do it, Travis says, coming back into the kitchen. It's easy. Well, his spirits have improved. What's for dinner? He asks. And when I tell him, he doesn't offer his usual wounded commentary. Yes, his spirits have improved immeasurably. Just before I go to sleep, I rub my hands over my breasts. Pain on both sides again. This has been happening a lot, all of a sudden. It can't be cancer. Cancer doesn't hurt. Cancer doesn't show up on both sides. I must be starting to have breast pain when I ovulate. Rita always does. I turn onto my side, burrow into my pillow, think about whether it's time to ovulate, and then I open my eyes wide and lie still as death. I have just figured out my weight gain. I sit up, slide into my slippers, go downstairs to look at the kitchen calendar with hands that are shaking. No X on any day last month or the month before. I press my fingers to my mouth, dry now, sticky. I sit at the table. How could I not have known this? This is exactly what happened with Travis. And I'd been so angry because everyone else I knew had lost weight the first trimester. Not me. My appetite had been amazing. I'd gained and gained. I push my face into my hands, moan. But then, hearing the front door open, I compose myself. Edward comes into the kitchen, heads for the refrigerator, then sees me. God, he says. I just had the date from hell. Remind me tomorrow to kill myself. What a relief to see you. Edward is such a pleasant man. I like him so much. He used to be a baby. I burst into tears. Edward leaves the refrigerator door open, comes to sit opposite me, takes my hand. What? He says. What happened? Oh, God, is it Travis? Not exactly, I say. Chapter 30. Well, I just can't believe this, David says. He is keeping his voice low. The restaurant is crowded, but I imagine he feels like screaming.
How?
It's a fair question. I'm not quite sure myself. But in the usual way, David, I hear myself saying, sperm meets egg. But aren't you too old? Apparently not. He looks down, stirs the ice in his drink with his fingers. He has such long fingers. I bet this baby has long fingers, too. Travis does. Looking up, David says, forgive me, but my sperm, right? I sit for a long moment, then say, no, I don't believe I do forgive you. I stand up, reach for my coat. He takes my arm. Please, don't make this more melodramatic than it already is. We'll take care of it, that's all. I'll take care of it, I say, and have the curious sensation, pushing the door open to leave, that two people are doing it. Oh, God, Rita keeps saying until I finally say, will you stop? Will you stop saying, oh, God? Well, Sam, this is so unbelievable. I mean, it's like those teenagers who live in trailers and go to the bathroom one day and deliver, and their whole family standing around with their mouths open saying, golly! Thank you for your incredible sensitivity. Oh, I'm sorry. I know this is... Well, I guess this accounts for some of the craziness you've been feeling. Who knows? It seems like divorce can do a pretty good job of that all by itself. True. Oh, poor Sam. The double whammy. When your hormones get back to normal, you'll probably feel lobotomized. So when are you going to have it done? What? The abortion. I called. And? And it's all set next week. But, Rita, don't even say it. I have to say it. They asked me these questions over the phone, and I just started bawling. Any other pregnancies? Yeah, I've had another pregnancy. It turned into Travis. You can't have it. Why not? Silence. I'm raising one on my own. Why not two? Oh, man. Do you need me to go with you? I will. I'll come back out there. We'll go together. When's the appointment? You don't need to come. Thanks, but it's okay. Who will go with you? They said it's preferable to bring someone, but you don't have to. They'll assign you someone. Great, rent a friend. But I'm not sure. I want to think about this. Don't think about it, just do it. You know, Rita, you're acting like a fucking man. You're not listening. You're just telling me what to do. I'm not sure it's the right thing. Well, fine. But you'd better decide fast. I know that. Okay, okay, look. You know I'll support you in whatever you decide, but I really don't think now is the time. I mean, come on, do you? I don't answer. When Travis was a newborn, I would go in to nurse him at night, and I would raise his T-shirt to watch him breathe. His stomach moved up and down so rapidly it pained me. I would look at his soft spots, afraid of them, see the pulsations from his beating heart. After a few weeks, he would interrupt himself while he was nursing to look up at me and smile, milk running down his chin, and I would tighten my hold on him, renew my vow that nothing would ever, ever hurt him. This is what I want to tell Rita, but I can't. King is right. The words would only hint at all I mean to say. What's David say? Rita asks. What does David say? Yank it out. Well, that's a little crude. When I told him, I felt so... We didn't talk much. I wish I hadn't told him. Why did you? I don't know. Not true, I know. I told him because I wanted his face to soften and for him to say, oh, Sam, that's wonderful. Listen, we'll work it out. I'm not happy away from you and Travis. This was wrong. Let me move back in. And then I would not worry about retirement planning. David could do that. And I would not think that I would grow old alone and demented in some filthy apartment with a chair by the window. I'll let you know, I tell Rita. I'll tell you when I know. In the dream, I am standing by a large tree, the bark with a deeply etched pattern like dried earth. Out of one of the cracks, a red tulip is growing. A hand is reaching toward it, ready to pick it. Oh, no, don't, I say. Don't pick it. It's new life. It's a miracle. I awaken, blink in the darkness, close my eyes again. Chapter 31. 2 days before the appointment,
I take a day off from work, tell Travis as he is eating breakfast that I'll be cleaning out his closet today.
No, he says, his mouth full of scrambled eggs. I have to. You can't shut the door anymore.
I'll do it, he says. You'll throw everything out.
First of all, I say, you won't do it. Secondly, I will not throw everything out.
Yeah, just the good stuff.
If you would keep your closet clean, then I wouldn't have to clean it for you. I don't enjoy cleaning it any more than you do. I've told you 100 times.
Oh, don't give me one of your lectures.
Travis, don't you take that tone of voice with me. I swear to God, do not speak to me like that again or I'll slap your face. I have never hit you yet, but I promise you I am entirely capable of it.
His eyes widen.
Boy, you're crabby.
Yes, I am.
I know.
Go to school.
He stands.
I am.
Fine.
Fine.
As I watch Travis go out the door, Lavender comes up the basement steps and into the kitchen.
Hi, she says, her voice croaky with sleep.
Hi.
I watch her grab a spoon, then head for the refrigerator and take out a carton of plain yogurt. She sits at the table and pulls off the lid, smells it.
I really hate this stuff.
Well, why eat it then? I ask tiredly.
'Cause everything else is, like, poisonous, she says. Everything else will give you cancer. The planet is so totally wrecked.
She swallows a mouthful of yogurt, shudders.
Lavender?
Yeah.
Did you tell Travis that if he eats snow, he could die?
It's true.
And that in a few years we'll all have to wear gas masks?
She shrugs.
You know, I say, I've been thinking. I don't think things are working out too well with you living here.
She looks up, sighs deeply.
You're like, kicking me out, right?
Not like.
I knew it.
I'm sure you did.
So, end of the month, right?
Right.
Lavender nods. This always happens.
Frankly, I'm not surprised.
I want to ask Lavender who her references were, probably relatives who wanted to make sure she didn't end up with them. But what's the difference?
I go upstairs to Travis's bedroom, sit at his desk, look around his room. He has made his bed, more or less. I reach over to tuck in one edge of the sheet, pull on the quilt to straighten it, find a sock, hold it in my hand. I look out his window, remember when his chin barely came to the ledge. Remember him later sitting on my lap while I helped him undress for bed, looking out that same window at the setting sun and saying with wonder, "The sky's coming down."
When I came downstairs smiling, I told David what Travis had said. From behind his newspaper, David said,
"Huh, he's mixed up."
I opened Travis's closet door, stared dejectedly at the mess. It's sort of amazing, the creativity of it. A veritable sculpture of clothes, games, old schoolwork, shoes, hangers, loose felt-tipped markers. Back in the corner is a stack of old children's books, the ones he'd like best. I pull one off the top of the pile. Pumpernickel Tickle and Mean Green Cheese. Ah, yes. I open the book, turn to the picture of an elephant and a boy who are playing cards on the boy's bed. Neither Travis nor I had found anything about that to be unusual. Of course a boy and an elephant are playing cards. What happens next? I close the book, put it back in the closet, shut the door, and go to the phone. This is Sam Morrow, I say. I'd like to cancel an appointment. I am up late, watching E.T. Couldn't sleep. Suddenly, between my legs, a warm wetness. I go into the bathroom, pull down my pajama bottoms. A fair amount of blood. I go into the kitchen, call the hospital emergency room, speak in a low voice to the nurse on duty. How old am I? He wants to know.
Oh, well then, I can come in if I want to, or I can just wait it out.
It will undoubtedly all pass without complication. If cramping gets bad, if I develop a fever, if the bleeding doesn't stop. Yes, I understand, I say. I am in my 40s. I already have a child. Therefore, there is no tragedy here. I feel more blood coming and go into the bathroom, sit on the toilet, and wait. I feel it pass. I stand, and holding a towel to myself, try to see it in the bloody water. Then I pull up my bottoms, and go to the kitchen for a tablespoon. I want to bury it in my yard. I want it always near, but it won't stay on the spoon, and I'm afraid to touch it with my hands. I flush the toilet and, quietly weeping, put on a sanitary pad. It's gone. Everything is gone. I can't hold anything. Back in bed, I cup my hands over my uterus and begin weeping so loudly I awaken Travis. He opens my door, sticks his head in. Mom? I stop crying. Yes. Are you crying? What to say, what not to say. Yes, I am. Oh. He scratches one foot with the other. Want me to come in there with you? I smile, feel tears slide into the corners of my mouth. It's okay, honey. Sometimes you just need to cry, right? I guess. It's just, you know, I was watching a sad movie. Which one? E.T. Oh, the part where he goes away? Yeah. Did you think that was sad, too? Yeah, I guess. Not that sad. Right. Well, I'm sorry I woke you up. Let's just go back to sleep, okay? And tomorrow let's have something special for breakfast. What? Whatever you want. Pancakes with blueberries? And bacon? Sure. Okay. He starts down the hall, then comes back into my room. Mom? Yeah? I hope you feel better. Thank you. I'll be fine. He hesitates, then comes over to kiss my cheek, which makes my throat hurt so much I make two fists in order not to cry out. Chapter 32. Would you like to try a sample of our new cheese? I ask. The older woman stops her grocery cart, squints at me. What is it? Well, it's a new kind of Swiss cheese, much lower in fat than the others. Is it any good? Would you like to taste it? She frowns. I don't think so. I put the foil tray back down on my card table. I'm wearing an apron with a cow on it. I would rather build a header, but this is the only job that was available for me today. Would you like to try a sample of our new cheese? I ask a middle-aged man. Does it come with a burger? He asks. No, it's just cheese. That was a joke, the man says. You don't have a very good sense of humor, do you? I smile. Guess not. Late that night, before going to sleep, I call King. I handed out cheese samples today, I say. What did you do? Painted bedrooms in a new house. Mission white, mission white, and mission white. I'm tired of working. Good. Let's take a day off tomorrow and go to a movie. Two movies. Okay. I hang up the phone and hear the sound of voices whispering. I get out of bed, come out into the hall. It's Edward and Travis, huddled together downstairs at the front door. What are you guys doing? I call down. It's midnight. Shh! Edward motions frantically for me to come down. What is it? I say, and then shushed again. Wait until I am at his side to whisper, what is it? I think it's an intruder, Edward says, looking meaningfully at Travis. Ah, what he means is it's a murderer. Edward is clutching his bathrobe at his neck with one hand, wielding his squash racket in the other. I pull Travis toward me. You go upstairs right now. Tomorrow I'm getting a dog. I'm not going upstairs, Travis says. He might come up there. He might. He might be up there now. He might have watched me go down the stairs. When did you last hear him? I ask Edward. He's outside. I think he's in the bushes. Well, what should we do? I ask. Should I call the cops? That'll just make him mad, Edward says. And then, oh, this is ridiculous. We need a man in the house. Mom, Travis says. What? I look at his upturned face and immediately calm down. Come with me, I say. It's all right. Let's go call the police. They'll be right over. I dial 911, then use my best speaking voice as I am being recorded. It takes 3.5 minutes for the police to arrive. We watch from the window as two overweight men get out of the squad car. The blue flashing lights are a comfort for once. They should be careful, Edward says. What are they doing, just getting out like that? They have guns, Travis whispers. Probably 38s or maybe magnums. What are you talking about, I say. What are you talking about guns? That's it. You don't play with Howard Nyehauser anymore. Do you mind, Edward says? Do you think this is the time and the place? Why don't you wait to see if we live? Then you can kill him. Shh, I say. I hear it now, too. The rustling of someone in the bushes. And then the police see him and put their hands, both of them, to their guns at exactly the same time, in the same way. A little police choreography, a little ballet. I start to laugh. Edward stares at me, bug-eyed. I'm sorry, I say. I always laugh when I'm nervous. I hate this about myself. Come out of there with your hands up, I hear one of the cops say, and I thrill to the familiarity of the phrase, which up to now I've only heard in movies on TV. A slight figure disentangles itself from the bushes. It is Lavender Blue, who, as she explains hysterically to the policeman, just forgot something, that's all. A statue of St. Jude she had buried out front when she first moved in. It was just for luck, she tells them as she slides into the car, the muddy patron saint clutched in her hand. I open the door. Excuse me. One cop slams the car door after Lavender, then heads up the walk toward me. The other cop gets in the front seat of the car and turns around to look at her, a weary sorrow in his face. It's all right, I tell the cop who is standing on my front porch. She used to live here. She just moved out. You don't want to file a report? No. She always visit this late? The cop asks. She has trouble sleeping. The cop tongues off a tooth, makes a muted smacking sound. Okay, then, take care. I close the door, turn to see Edward stashing his racket back in the front hall closet. He combs his hair back with his fingers, tosses his head, tightens his robe belt. Well, he says, good night. I'm not tired, Travis says, exhausted looking. Chapter 33. I've gotten too dressed up. It's only a lunch. But there was something in his voice. I see David come in the door and wave at him. He comes over to the table, smiles, sits, smiles again. The waiter comes over and I order herbal tea. The same, David says. You like tea? I ask. You never used to. He shrugs. It's so cold out. Seems like a good idea. It is cold. Yes. Sam. A long silence. I wait. He has circles under his eyes. He's lost a little weight. The waiter brings our tea, and we both order sandwiches. And then David says, I don't know exactly how to say this, but I've been thinking. Sam, I made a big mistake. I'm coming home. I sit, frozen. Do you think we should tell Travis together? Well, David, You don't need to answer right away. We can think about the best way to do it. But I'm just so relieved. What about your girlfriend? Oh, She was only... Did she leave you? He looks into my eyes. No, it was my decision. He's telling the truth. I try to imagine telling Travis. Think of how happy he will be to learn that his dad is coming back. I can have my old life again. I've missed you, Sam. I've come to understand so much about myself lately, about the way we were together, about what we had, that I just... He stares into his teacup, shakes his head. What do you miss, David? He looks up, laughs. Oh, come on, Sam. I think you must know that. Our routines. Travis, I swallow, touch his arm. About me, David. What do you miss about me? Well, he smiles, leans forward. I miss everything. The way you're always there for me. The way you never question me or give me a hard time. Even the meals you make. You, David, how about this? The way your shoes are always untied. The way you cry over greeting cards. The way you try to hide your cowlick. The freckle at the side of your right breast. Yeah. It's too late. I pick up my purse. I'm sorry, but I think it will be better if I just go, now. Sam, wait a minute. We'll talk later, David, but not about this. I'm sorry. I am a little. I walk down the block thinking of him sitting there. It's odd. It pains me that his clothes are still so familiar to me. I took the shirt he was wearing to the cleaners many times. I saw the belt and trousers he had on hanging in our closet. I believe I could tell you everything that's in his pockets. But it will happen soon that I won't know anymore. Chapter 34. Spinach lasagna. King is making for me a grand Sunday luncheon, and I'm bringing the garlic bread. I spent the day attempting to make it from scratch, but now that it's out of the oven, I regret the time I spent doing it. It looks awful. I break a piece off the end, taste it. Well, if ever I think about baking bread for a living, I'll remember this. I dump the loaf into the garbage and head for Franco's Market, home of Pepperidge Farm. When I arrive at King's, he ushers me in with a flourish, bending low at the waist and sweeping a dish towel through the air. He is wearing an apron, and when he stands up straight again, I see that he has drawn on a thin mustache. I smile, reach out to touch it, but he holds his hand up protectively. "Don't mess it up," he says. It took me a long time to get it so realistic-looking. His kitchen table has been covered with a red and white checked tablecloth. There are breadsticks and a glass at the center of the table, an antipasto platter, a candle stuck into a Chianti bottle. "Well, this is wonderful," I say, laughing. "Thank you. Sit down. Would you like some wine?" "In the afternoon? Well, why not?" I nod, pull my chair in close to the table, hold up my glass. He fills it halfway with red wine. Then, when I don't put the glass down, he fills it to the top. This is my favorite restaurant. "I'm stuffed," I say. "My stomach hurts." I am lying on King's sofa, my shoes off, my empty wine glass at my side. "Yeah, that's how I used to feel after every meal," King says. "You didn't eat half as much as I did." "Sure I did." He's just being gracious. He'd only had 2 helpings. "You're losing quite a bit, aren't you? I hope you don't mind my asking. Do you mind my asking?" "No, of course not. I've lost 40 pounds. Another 20 I'll have to beat Edward off with a stick." "Is that what you want to do? Lose another 20? "Yeah, I guess." "That's great," I say. "Although..." "What?" "Well, I just want you to know that I think you're fine the way you are." He says nothing, and I look down, feel myself flushing. I shouldn't have said that. He's not losing weight for me. Finally, to break the silence, I ask, "Do you like having no curtains?" "I never thought of it. Do I need them?" "I don't know. No, I like how everything's so simple here." I've never been much of a decorator. My parents weren't either. What we did was read, you know, at dinner and everything. "Do your parents live near here?" "No, they died, both within the last couple years. My dad was at a bookstore, looking at an atlas. He'd wanted a new one. And my mom had a heart attack exactly a year later." "I'm sorry, I thought they were still around." "Yeah, I'm sorry too. Because they would have been really happy. They always wanted me to." The doorbell rings, and I sit up, slide into my shoes. I don't know why. I guess I'm afraid it's Travis checking up on me. "Why are your shoes off?" he'd say. But of course it's not Travis. When King opens the door, I see a willowy blonde woman, very attractive, smiling. "Linda," King says. "Oh. I thought I'd surprise you," she says, and I hear the confident lilt of flirtation in a relationship that is going well. "What's on your lip?" she says, reaching up to wipe it away, then seeing me. "Oh, you're busy." I stand. "It's okay. Come on in. I'm Sam. I'm just a friend." I regret having eaten so much, not having worn mascara. King steps aside. "Yes, come in." Linda enters, but stands by the door. "I can't stay, really. I just wanted to drop a book off." She hands a small volume to King, and he smiles, thanks her. "I want a coat like Linda's. It's camel-colored, with a collar that you can stand up high. Her boots are rich brown high-heeled." "Well, that's just silly. High-heeled boots. Ridiculous. Make up your mind, sexy or safe." "Large gold hoop earrings, too," I see, watching Linda push her hair back. "Catch something in there and say goodbye to your lobe. I could have blonde hair, too, if I wanted. A word to Edward and voila. Last week he tipped me, Very elegant. Linda's lipstick color is nice, but her blush is too obvious. Plus, the woman is stupid. I can tell just by looking at her. King can do much better than this. I'll tell him. I owe it to him, as a friend. There is a sudden silence, and I realize something has been said to me. Pardon, I say, smiling an awful fake smile. My chest hurts. I just said it was nice to meet you, Linda says. I hope I'll see you again. Oh, yes, I hope so too. After King closes the door, I sit back down. Well, she's very nice. Yeah. She's the one you met from the personals, right? Right. So what does she do? She's a teacher. Nursery school, of course, she's exactly the type. I see Linda in her high-heeled boots hop-hop-hopping around in a circle with her class, all of them being rabbits, noses twitching, bent hands for ears. She teaches at Boston University. Okay, freshman English. What does she teach? Quantum mechanics. Oh, uh-huh. Well, that's... So what book did she bring you? King hands me a volume of Shakespeare's sonnets. You like these, I ask? Sure, don't you? I never understand them. I clear my throat, smile. I need to go home. In the hamper are about 40 loads of wash, and I need to pay the bills. There are many bills, stacks and stacks of them. Shakespeare's not so hard, King says. You can understand this. He opens to a page. Here, rough winds do shake the darling buds of May. Nothing hard about that, right? He sits beside me on the sofa, points to the line, says it again. See? And they are, aren't they? Darling, the buds. I stare into my lap. His breath is like licorice. Why is his breath like licorice? Mine is like a garlic factory, I'm sure. Not that there is such a thing, a garlic factory. I think about it anyway. Imagine blonde-haired girls wearing braids and white uniforms, standing on an assembly line, shaping cloves into bulbs. Then I look up at him. His breath is like licorice, and his apartment is overly warm, because he knows that's how I like it, and his hand is under my chin, and he is going to kiss me. King. He sits back. I'm sorry. No, it's... I mean, aren't you... sort of involved with Linda? Yes. I think she's sort of involved. I'd say so, I stand, head for the kitchen. Come on, I'll help you clean up. He follows me. You don't have to. No, I say. I want to, really. I like washing dishes. I wash and he wipes. For a long while we don't talk, just stand, hips nearly touching, quietly working. And then I draw in a breath, take my hands out of the dishwater, and put them on King's shoulders, and do not understand how he knows how to kiss like that. I reach around him and untuck his shirt, wonder if I really mean this. I pull away from him, look into his face. Is this okay? He nods. Should we? He nods again, takes my hand and leads me to the bedroom. There, he carefully folds down the blankets, fluffs the pillows, and then he starts to unbutton his shirt, but stops. I don't know. I mean, do I? Yes. He doesn't move. I'll tell you what, I say. Let's just talk, but lying down. His relief brightens the room. I lie beside him, stretched out on my side. He is on his back, his eyes closed. Now that we've decided to slow down, I'm dying to speed up. I put my head on his shoulder, my hand on his chest. He's more solid than I had imagined. I unbutton two buttons, wait, then rise up to look into his face. Okay? Yes, he says. And then we don't talk anymore. And when I get home, I look at myself in the mirror to see if what I feel shows. What I see is the faint transfer of King's mustache, and I wash it off with regret. At 8 o'clock, Travis and I are watching TV when Edward comes home. He nods hello, hangs up his coat, then comes to sit on the sofa beside us. At the commercial, Travis goes into the kitchen, and Edward leans toward me. What happened to you? He whispers. And then, when I don't answer, he leans back, arms crossed, smiling. That's what I thought. What, I say, you don't know anything. Oh, please. I stare at him. Your teeth are going to get all dried out if you don't stop smiling. And then your lips will stick to them and you'll look like a chimpanzee. Stop smiling. You're not. At midnight, still awake, I call Rita. We did it, I say. Rita gasps. Tell me everything, everything. Wait, first I want to go get a glass of wine. Okay, I will too. I go quietly down to the kitchen, pour myself a glass of wine, and head back to my bedroom, closing both Travis's and my door. I get under the covers, pick up the phone. Are you there? Yes. Tell me everything. Okay. I lie back against the pillows, take a sip of wine, wonder where to start. I see King's face over me again, a tenderness there that made me separate into two selves, one who lay in a warm bed held by warm arms, and another who looked down and nodded. He had run his hands over my breast so gently, so tentatively, and then his mouth was on me and moving down so slowly. And when finally he put himself inside me, he froze for a moment, his breath held, his eyes fixed on mine, and then there was no separation of anything. For the first time in my life, I had the sensation of simultaneous giving and taking so huge there was no room for anything else anywhere. It was less sexual than sacred, close to what I think a good death might be. He had wept a little afterward, saying that he was afraid to believe it could ever happen like this, that he was so grateful that I was the one, that he was sorry he was weeping. He didn't know why he was weeping. He felt terrific. He felt like running outside and lifting up cars. And I held his giant shaggy head on my chest and stroked his hair and said that was fine. I would be happy to help him, so long as the cars were small. And then we had done everything again. And then he had said he was sorry he still weighed so much. He would lose more. He hadn't hurt me, had he? And I said, no, he had not. Rita, I say. Yeah. I think I don't want to tell you. I mean, it was wonderful. I just don't want to tell you the details. I feel like it's ours. Silence. And then Rita says, Sam? Yeah. Do you have your glass of wine? Yeah. Well, hold it up, girl, and let's have a toast. Chapter 35. Why are you making things so fancy? Travis asks. Who's coming? Mom and Lydia. That's all? Yes. Why don't you just do things regular then? Because they're fancy. A horn honks outside. Travis doesn't move. There's Dad, I say. I know. Well, are you ready? Yeah. Are you having that cake you made for dinner? Yes. Is it King's recipe? Yes. I'll save you some, okay? The horn honks again. Go, honey. Don't keep him waiting. He lifts his duffel bag, shoulders it. It's more fun here. How should I feel about this? I'm glad. I'm sad. But I'm glad. And I know that sometimes the cake will be sitting on David's counter, too. I go to the door with Travis, kiss him goodbye, wave to David, hurry back to the kitchen. I have just put in the bread to warm when the doorbell rings, and then I hear my mother yoo-hooing her way down the hall. I kiss her, then Lydia, then lead them to the lavishly decorated dining room table, where they exclaim softly over everything. Travis is right. It is fun here. We are sitting back in our chairs, satisfied, empty dessert plates before us. Lydia is talking about her oldest grandchild who lives in Seattle and who visited her yesterday. He's almost 40. And do you know he still goes to see if I keep his little black plastic horse in my nightstand? He left it at my house when he was just a little guy, maybe two or so, and I put it in my drawer to keep for him until the next time I saw him. But he liked that it was by my bed, and he told me to keep it there for him. Every time I've seen him since, he's asked to see it, checking on the livestock, he calls it. This makes sense to me. I once spent hours in Veronica's basement looking through scrapbooks. I found drawings that Louise and I had done over the years, and I actually counted, making sure Louise didn't have more in there than I did. We were exactly even. I suppose you always want someone to prize things about you. I have a footlocker for Travis's drawings, his schoolwork, art projects. Although he's hardly sentimental about it, he looked through it one day, then asked, "What do you keep all this junk for?" "You might want it someday," I told him. "What for? It's embarrassing." "It won't be when you're 40. "Yeah, right. Like I'll be able to even see you when I'm 40. I stared at him, open-mouthed, and he left the room.
"How's married life, Lydia?" Veronica asks.
"Oh, we're very happy. Thomas is a wonderful man. I feel lucky to have found him, and I'm so glad to have taken the chance all over again. Not a single regret." My mother smiles, looks down at her plate.
"You were very happy in your marriage, too, weren't you?" Lydia asks my mother. "We were. Sad to say, I think that's a rare thing. I think most young people today are so focused on tomorrow they forget all about today. And I think they're as afraid of happiness as they are of pain. Scared to say they care. Scared to take a chance. Scared to say they're just as sentimental and full of human need as people always have been and always will be."
"It's true," Lydia says, stirring her tea. They are leaning toward each other, nodding in complete agreement. I suppose I'm one of the young people they're referring to, one of those scaredy cats. But I did admit to my own needs, to my own sentimentality, and look where it got me.
"You know," Veronica says, "I was over visiting a girlfriend the other day, and her father was staying with her, this old geezer who used to be a farmer. Really nice old man, blind now, but not a bit sorry for himself. He sat down with us and was telling us about life on the farm. Said he still dreamed about it, that in his dreams he could still see. Said he could ask for what he wanted to dream about, too, and oftentimes it would happen."
"Really?" Lydia says. "I'd love to be able to do that."
"Well, me too, you can imagine. I'd be with my husband every night. Anyway, this guy said that he'd asked his dreams to let him see his wife again, and sure enough, it happened. He saw a time after they were first married. They were out on the front porch, thinking of all they were going to do, just sitting on the wooden steps, holding hands, the sun going down, talking about how they'd have babies till the plumbing quit. He said the lilacs were out, and the smell was so sweet it could bring a dead man back to life. His wife let her hair out of its bun, shook it all loose, and she looked over and smiled at him, and he said, 'Lord, she was so pretty, and she was my wife.' Well, my friend and I just couldn't say a word, all choked up. Just seeing him all those years ago, thinking life was longer than it is. But you know, he said that at least he knew right then that it was a good moment. Said mostly you don't know in this life. You don't know when it's happening. You look back later and say, 'Oh, well, now that was a good time.' But he said he knew it then. Said he knew it lots of times. He said, 'Yes, sir, I've been blessed.'" "Well, that's just how I feel," Lydia says. My mother looks at me and I nod. I know that despite everything she lost, she feels the same way and wants me to as well. I see us suddenly, as though from above, three women sitting around a dining room table, our mother's hands folded in our laps, our lipstick faded from our mouths. All around us, clocks ticking, stars shining. They used to be my age, and I will soon be theirs. They have never forgotten the reason to love. I don't know what I'm waiting for. I look at my watch, start to speak. "Go," my mother says. Chapter 36. No one answers when I knock at his door. I try it, find it open, and put my head in. "King?" And then louder, "King?" "Sam?" I hear back faintly. "Wait just a second, I'm in the bathtub." I take off my coat and my boots, undress as I walk down the hall, enter the bathroom naked. He is standing on the bath mat, a towel wrapped around him.
"Oh, hello," he says. "Wow, nice outfit."
"Get back in the bathtub," I say. And when he does, I climb in too. I lean against his chest, watch water cascade over the side. "Oops," I say lazily. It's pretty, the sight of the brief little waterfall. Is the water too hot? King asks. No, this is just how I like it. He picks up the soap, and I watch his big hands in front of me, lathering up, then rubbing across my breasts, my stomach. King? Yes. Do you think you could love me? His hands stop moving. You mean now? No, I meant generally. He sighs, and for a moment I feel as though my insides are shrinking, folding in on themselves. I shouldn't have asked. It's too soon. But then I hear him say, "Oh, Sam, what else would I do with you but love you forever?" I sit so still I can hear him breathing, and he is breathing very quietly. I think of a conversation I had with Edward recently. I was sitting at the kitchen table, and he was standing over me trying out some fancy hairdo. He was saying how similar King and I were, that it was no wonder we liked each other so much. "I mean, you were both running around with your helmets on backward," he said, "living lives that were totally oblivious. Thank God you met each other so you could wake up." "I wasn't oblivious," I said, and Edward said, "Oh, come on, can't you see the difference in yourself?" "Well," I said, "I know how to change a furnace filter now, if that's what you mean. I can unstick a garbage disposal." "Oh, I think it's a bit more than that," he said. "So it is." I lean in closer to King, close my eyes, and suddenly I am a little girl again, sitting on the grass outside my house one hot summer day, resting after a solitary game of hopscotch. There are Johnny jump-ups growing out of the cracks in the sidewalk. The clouds are circus animals. There is lemonade in the refrigerator. My shorts are a fine faded red. My father is due home at any moment, and I like to watch him get out of the car and take long strides toward me, his face full of loving intention. I run to him, and he lifts me up. And then together we go inside toward whatever else might follow. We are full of faith, blessed by it. I remember now. This has been a presentation of High Bridge Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.